You're listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, Peace Talk with Tundra Women's Coalition.
Hello, this is Annie Mae Leaf, the Outreach and Prevention Coordinator at TWC, and I want to welcome and thank you for joining us today on the Peace Talk radio show. TWC's mission in the region is to provide safe, empowering services for families experiencing domestic or sexual violence. We seek to promote violence-free communities through culturally appropriate outreach programs and supportive services. The Peace Talk radio show is our opportunity to let the region know what work we are doing and answer questions if people have them. This is a call-in show, so if you would like more information or to express interest in any topics surrounding domestic violence and sexual assault, please feel free to call in at 907-543-5985, 907-543-2756, or call in at 800-995-9954. The thrift store is now accepting donations, so if you have donations, please call TWC to receive instructions on how and where to bring the donations here. Please refrain from leaving them outside the thrift store, as those items will be affected by the weather, so please make sure to call when you are donating. The thrift store will be open this weekend from 11 to 3. Please call to find out which day, and one grocery bag full of clothes will cost $1. And there are job openings at the TWC website, which is www.tundrapeace.org. And please feel free to put the application there if you want to be a part of our TWC staff family. If you would like to contact TWC for information on any of our services or resources, you can call our 24-hour crisis line at 907-543-3456. Our toll-free number, which is 1-800-478-7799, and then our Best Foot for Local business line at 907-543-3444. Today on the Peace Talk radio show, we're going to be talking about teen dating violence, knowing the whys and spotting the signs, as this month was Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. Again, I'm your host, Annie Mae Lee, and if you would like to call in for any questions or to express interest in any topics, you can call 543-5985, 543-2756, and 800-995-8954. All statements and opinions shared on the Peace Talk radio show are coming from a place of education and collaboration. We do not come from a place of judgment or the idea that we know what is best for any person who may be listening. Our goal is simply to share with the community and hopefully move forward together in violence prevention. So Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month started in, I believe, 1997, with a week to bring awareness to teens in abusive relationships and inform those youth on the warning signs. This is really important because at the time, domestic violence was seen as an issue for adults, but later on, kind of studies and surveys showed that it is very present in teen relationships as well. Teen Dating Violence Awareness Week actually, because of its popularity and how prevalent the issue was, kind of increased into Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month in 2002. It was identified as Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month due to the importance of early education when it comes to relationships and the number of agencies and programs that had started in support of youth who are going through it. So now Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month is a large part of the prevention of perpetrating or falling victim to domestic violence in young relationships and has grown to include resources and support for agencies who support youth, such as schools, shelters, drop-in centers, and relationship roles. And leadership groups. According to the CDC, nearly 1 in 11 female and approximately 1 in 15 male high school students report having experienced physical dating violence in the last year. 1 in 9 female and 1 in 36 male high school students reported having experienced sexual dating violence in the last year. 26% of women and 15% of men who were victims of contact sexual violence, physical violence, and or stalking by their intimate partner in their lifetime first experienced these forms of violence before the age of 18. And the burden of teen dating violence is not shared equally across all groups. Sexual minority groups are disproportionately affected by all forms of violence. And some racial and ethnic minority groups are disproportionately affected by many types of this violence. And I got this information off the CDC. Now, the types of violence that's common or more common in teen dating violence relationships are physical abuse, which is any injury or pain caused by reckless handling or purposeful handling of another person. So the next one, emotional abuse, so using words, intimidation, and manipulation to harm your partner or to gain something from your partner. And then sexual abuse is any unwanted attention or acts that are sexual in nature, meaning that it doesn't always have to have physical contact, or doing things like gathering and distributing sexual images and messages, usually using blackmail and bribery in kind of that type of abuse. So each abusive act, though none are justifiable, have a purpose when you're actually looking at teen dating violence and domestic violence. So one of these purposes kind of behind these acts is to cause fear in their partner. And this causing fear is one of the easiest ways to gain control of situations and, unfortunately, of dating partners in domestic violence relationships. This can be seen as having just a lot of, one is just a lot of control in the relationship. They might show pointed hostility or just really make environments hostile when you are in their presence, which can cause fear. Using a lot of intimidation or threatening, whether it be physical or using verbal threatening. Actual physical violence, and then using sexual violence. And we're going to get into a little bit about what physical and sexual violence is going to are. Another purpose for kind of abusive acts in relationships is to lower the partner's self-esteem. And this happens Lowering the partner's self-esteem can make the survivor of abuse question leaving their partner, and the partners may do it to make them feel better about themselves at the expense of the person they're dating. So this comes in many forms, like blaming bad behavior on something that their partner did or didn't do, having constant put-downs or belittling the beliefs, opinions, and morals of their partner, doing things like guilting their partner into doing what they want them to do and isolating their partner from friends and family. Doing this allows for the abuser to deny blame for their actions, boost their own confidence, and maintain control in the relationship in that way, because emotionally that person feels like they may be at fault or that they can fix the situation. And again, you see that in lowering the partner's self-esteem, you see a lot of hostility. You'll see a lot of disrespect for both the partner's beliefs and possibly possessions. You'll see a lot of dishonesty, whether it's dishonesty about kind of the current situation they're in, where, like, the responsibility to communicate and do better lies with the other person, just dishonesty in many ways. And then a lot of denial. And if you've heard the radio show before, and this is just kind of my belief, denial is very, very dangerous in relationships because then it creates this lack of accountability or the feeling of a lack of a need for accountability, which can be very difficult. So the next one is to project blame and guilt onto the partner and deflecting one's emotional pain. So this is a little different from simply just, like, lowering the partner's self-esteem. It's usually fueled by, like, desperation. And people who use this kind of tactic, this the project, making their partner feel really guilty or just really at fault, usually comes from, in this scenario, an unhealthy dependence on their dating partner. So this kind of abuse is common, and they might manipulate their partner and make them feel bad for normal, healthy behaviors, such as just in general hanging out with friends, making big decisions without taking them into account. And just in my own personal experience, I see this a lot when there's things like getting a new job, applying to certain colleges. Really just those steps into independence can be very threatening to someone who has a very high dependence on a partner. Doing things like deciding you need space or, and we see this kind of often breaking up when things aren't working out. And the ways that they manipulate their partner to make them feel sorry for them, they'll bring up things kind of outside of their control, such as bullying or abuse, stresses in the home, past traumas, and blame that emotional distress on their current behaviors. Or kind of like this idea that it can be fixed by another person. So, and then the last one is to really just like tether the partner to their side. This goes hand in hand with that unhealthy dependence on their partner. And you'll see a lot of isolation, things like coercion. Coercion is like manipulation. Manipulating your partner with the intent to have like a certain outcome. So when people ask me kind of what coercion is, I'll give an example. It's just faking pregnancies to keep a person in a relationship or something like that. That would be an example of coercion. Making false accusations of infidelity or abuse. And again, this is kind of deflecting their own actions onto their partner. Exaggerating their partner's actions in order to encourage them to feel really out of control. And this is one of the things that when we talk to women in the shelter, they say kind of lasts for a really long time. This idea that one, the abuse could have been made better or been stopped by them, or they could have like left the situation more, which really can be painful. Two, just the emotional abuse. One thing that I hear a lot is that like the physical pain goes away. But then also just the constantly making them feel like they're crazy or they're, whether it's defense of themselves, or the children, or just really going against their partner. So really this exaggerating actions in order to encourage a feeling of, like, guilt or out of controlness is really painful. So this could be restraining your partner and then doing things like restricting a partner's social media presence. Now that's something that is kind of a newer worry when it comes to teenage violence. So above all of these, and one big thing, and of course I already said this before, but I can't emphasize this enough, abuse is about control. Teen dating violence is about control. Domestic violence is about control. Sexual violence is about control. And until we look at what causes the need to control and the need to possess and just this need and inability to cope with emotions when you're looking at teen dating violence. And this is something I say to teens when they have situations where they're in violent relationships, is that a lot of times it can be really difficult because though all of these actions are in order to control their partner, it can be very, very hard to sorry, I lost myself. So how to spot the warning signs in yourself or in your own relationship can be really, really difficult because when you're feeling like out of control or that you can't control the situation, it can be really difficult to kind of sit and look at small parts of your relationship in a critical manner or in a way that someone who isn't in kind of a traumatized state or hasn't been, that can be very understandable for someone who isn't in the same circumstances. So it can be really, really hard to spot the signs. And the signs that I generally like to say are is that you are made to feel lesser and like you won't be enough or you'll never be enough. When you're in one of these situations, your partner may purposefully humiliate you in front of other people, which is like purposefully continuing or starting fights in front of people or bringing criticisms of you and saying them in front of other people, things like that. Mocks you for or keeps you from your priorities or interests. This can be very difficult, especially in young life, and can be hard to notice. And in my experience with working with teens, because at the time, priorities may be stuff like the relationship and things like that, but then I have to kind of ask them, what were your priorities and interests before you were in the relationship, and has there been any type of sign of them keeping you from it? That can be very difficult to spot. So a warning sign also is that your partner monitors where you are and who you're with. And this goes against our rights as people in relationships. And I bring up the relationship rights quite a bit, and I will bring them up later on during this hour. The right to choose your own friends and to have your own freedom and space is really, really important. So your partner treats you as lesser than or beneath them. They may show extreme jealousy or just show their emotions in the extreme off. In a way that's more accusatory than things like trying to cope or trying to resolve a situation. We talked a lot about this before, shifting the blame and guilt onto their partner when they make mistakes or they escalate things like arguments. Another warning sign is that they might accuse you of exaggerating or attention-seeking when expressing hurt or discomfort, whether it be like physical, sexual, or emotional discomfort. They may constantly change the topic when they're at fault, so just lacking a lot of accountability and really lacking interest in creating opportunities for accountability. They may make their partner the reason for everything that goes wrong, whether it's within that partner's control or not. And, of course, there is, like, actual physical, sexual, and emotional abuse. So example of physical abuse can range from different things. So usually what I say when I go to, like, the villages and I teach about teen dating violence is I'll ask them about abuse, and they'll say things immediately, like punching, kicking, you know, throwing stuff at, you know, using weapons, things like that. But I like to say that really it's any type of physical contact that restricts you, hurts you, you know, keeps you, meant to control you and to harm you in any way. So when I say things like, you know, pinching and pulling hair is really common, and stuff like just grabbing your arm could be considered physical abuse. We're actually really, really shocked. And I usually give this as an example, kind of this. I was sort of in kind of relationship with someone, and they grabbed my arm to restrain me from leaving in an argument, and that was not something I accepted. So I like to say that it could be something as simple as, like, grabbing the arm and then go all the way into something very, very dangerous, like strangulation. And I'm sorry, I got really ahead of myself. So actually, this is a good way to get into the cycle of violence. The cycle of violence is something we use as a tool to kind of explain how violence in a relationship is maintained and possibly why people maybe stay in a violent relationship. So In a violent relationship, the cycle starts with the honeymoon phase. And the honeymoon phase is a time where a time of infatuation with a couple, where things are really good, faults aren't realized yet. You know, there haven't really been that many arguments. There hasn't really been that many disagreements. And then that goes into the tension building stage. And the tension building stage is kind of a time where faults are realized. You know, arguments are had. Disagreements or in general, just like negative emotions are starting to come out more. And then that in an unhealthy relationship that builds and builds and builds. And I like to say, like, when you pump a bunch of air into a jar, eventually it'll explode. So the next stage in an unhealthy relationship is the explosion. And this is an instance of physical, sexual, or emotional violence towards a partner. So in the relationship cycle, after the explosion, what happens is usually people, like, they really, they either go, like, one or two ways. One where they, like, express a lot of remorse, the I'm so sorry, getting things like gifts, getting things like doing nice things for them in order to get on the good graces of their partner, to keep them in the relationship. Now, the other way that they move from the explosion stage back into the honeymoon stage is shifting the blame and a lot of denial. So saying, like, well, and this is just an example, of course, saying things like, well, you know, I have a lot of issues at home and you were yelling at me and that's the reason why I did it, so you shouldn't have been doing that. And this kind of one of them, like, creates hope in their partner, creates the hope that things will get better, and that when they're showing responsibility or they're taking responsibility for their actions, that this will be a turning point. And then the other really lets them take on a lot of responsibility, so they feel that they need to make it better. And that goes back into the honeymoon stage to start the cycle again. Now, after a while, the honeymoon stage starts to look different. It looks more like a calm stage, you know, where things aren't violent, things are calmed down. And then it goes back into the tension building stage, back into the explosion stage, and then back to the calm stage. Now, the more that people go through this cycle, the more, dangerous the violence in the relationship becomes. So I talked earlier a little offhandedly about how grabbing can be a form of violence. And when I talk to women who've been through this unhealthy relationship cycle before, they'll say that they can actually, when they think back, they can actually see there were times where they were, like, grabbed by the arm and stuff before what they would consider the abuse happened. And then it kind of escalates into more. And, of course, like, all forms of violence are bad, so I'm going to just say lethal forms of violence. So you also have, like, the healthy relationship cycle. And the healthy relationship cycle starts the same as the cycle of violence. So it starts with the honeymoon stage where, no faults are realized. Well, not no faults, but most faults aren't realized. Arguments have not really happened yet. There hasn't really just been any friction in the relationship at this point. And then that goes into the tension building stage. But instead of all of these issues and these arguments and these angers and stresses building up, they're resolved by communication. And when I say communication, you know, people like to ask, and especially teens, like to ask a lot of, how does communication kind of help? And that's because, like, instead of creating a lot of, like, pressure and just adding more air to the jar, it's slowly let out. And I actually give the example of, like, burping kombucha, you know, instead of it building and building and building, you open the jar once in a while to let the pressure out in order to keep it safe. And that naturally goes into the honeymoon stage when things are resolved or peaceful. And at no point in that healthy relationship cycle does one partner become endangered by the other. So the way that an unhealthy relationship cycle ends, and this is a little sad, so I'm going to start kind of with the saddest one first, is that it could be things like homicide or suicide. It could end in legal trouble or incarceration of one of the partners. It could lead to things like separation. And then another way to break out of the relationship cycle is to choose to be nonviolent and choose to seek help, and sometimes outside help, to resolve issues that contribute to the need to control and contribute to the need to have ownership over your partner. And in the healthy cycle, because at no point does that person be in danger, usually you'll see that the healthy relationship cycle ends in things like separation for the most part. So it's communication that really is the difference between an unhealthy and unhealthy relationship cycle. So when teens ask, like, how do you have a relationship, how do you communicate within a relationship, I usually give them an example of how to resolve an issue. And then so that created kind of the five steps to having a healthy argument. So the first step in steps of communication or how to have a healthy argument, again, this is that third stage in a healthy relationship, is that you state your issues in a calm and respectful way, and that if you're unable to control emotions, you decide if it's best to wait, or if this is something that needs to be resolved as soon as possible. So the second step is to take the time to listen to your partner without interrupting or accusing, this is really important because when you're given your time to share, it's important that they have their time to share and that you have your time to listen as well. I always put it as a note to refrain from changing the subject or bringing up past arguments at that moment because, you know, and I'm guilty of doing this, and when I give this example, like, a lot of people feel that they are guilty of doing this too. It's really easy to go from, like, oh, leave the shoes at the front of the door to being like, well, and if I said something like, well, you shouldn't leave towels on the floor, or you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, well, you did this last week. It's really detrimental to having a healthy argument. So just really focusing on this one topic, on this one issue right now, resolving that, and then possibly moving on to the next one is really important. So the fourth one is to find a solution that works for you and your partner, but if what they ask of you and what you ask of them is against their rights as a dating relationship partner, then there is no need to compromise. And then the last step is if you feel anger or emotions rising, it's important to respectfully and considerately shelf the conversation for a later date. So when we're thinking about our basic relationship rights, these are just rights in a relationship that everyone has, that everyone should have, and that everyone's entitled to. Sorry. So these relationship rights are that I have the right to choose my own friends and hang out with them, you know, as I please. This is a right that everyone has, simply because support systems are really important. And sometimes when an entire support system is kind of involved in a relationship, but surrounded in a relationship, it can be really hard. to seek help and to seek support later on. So I have the right to take care of myself first. I have the right to say no, and I do not have to explain myself. So in this situation, I have the right to feel safe. And it's really important to feel safe to say no and feel safe to make your own decisions. So I have the right to love and be loved. I have the right to privacy and alone time. I have a right to grow individually and change. So I have a right to trust my instincts. I have the right to choose a partner I can trust. I have the right to have my things and me be treated with respect and consideration. I have a right to pursue my dreams without consideration of the future of my partner. I have the right to form other healthy relationships outside of the relationship I have with my partner. I have the right to express my opinion, even if my partner doesn't agree with it or like it. I have the right to make mistakes in my relationship. I have the right to not worry about what others think of. I have the right to get angry and express my emotions when I feel. And I have the right not to fix my partner's problems. And these are rights we all have in dating relationships. These are all rights that we have with our partners, but also this is kind of like a sort of responsibility. So though we have our rights in the relationship, it's our responsibility to make sure we're upholding the rights of our partner as well. So accountability is really important. Accountability can be really hard, and there's like a lot of reasons why accountability can be hard. And when you're looking at your relationship rights, and turning them into responsibilities, it can be really difficult to actually apply that to how you are with your partner. So self-accountability can be hard because of things like pride. So we want to believe we're good people, and sometimes it makes it hard to admit when we're wrong or making bad decisions. But self-accountability is really, really important. And I would say this is kind of one of the things I say the most when working with teens, that we have to look at ourselves as well. I look at the way that our partner is treating us, sometimes critically. So denial, sometimes we might know the things we're doing are wrong but choose to ignore it or just really say, like, what I'm doing is not bad or doesn't fit this mold. A lot of people who abuse do not believe that they are abusers. We could be embarrassed to have self-accountability. We could be afraid that if we hold ourselves accountable, other people will see us differently or distance themselves from us. Or, and this is really important to note, we might not have been taught to hold ourselves accountable because this isn't like communication. It can be hard because it's not something we learn like in school. It's not something that's necessarily like taught, and it's not necessarily a lesson given to us. So really, sometimes we might not know what healthy relationships look like. And this is because that job is usually given to someone else, this feeling of accountability. You know, we start relationships in life with this kind of follower and leader mentality. You know, you have, when you were a kid, it was your parents and you, you know, this person was in charge, you followed. Even like when I was a kid and I had my siblings, we had the oldest in charge and the rest followed, principal, parents, law enforcement. Those are all kind of places where they hold you accountable rather than holding yourself accountable. So, accountability itself is needed for all aspects of someone's life, whether it be, like, job, the law, like, being in relationships. And we might love someone enough to accept all aspects of, like, our family and friends, but not everyone is going to tolerate behavior like this. So it's also really important that we as people kind of hold our families and our friends responsible. And this is actually can be very difficult. It's really, really important that It's really important in dating relationships that when you It's really important in dating relationships or really in relationships, sorry. I'm trying to familiar or like friend relationships that you kind of look at them and tell them like what they're doing is wrong in relationships. Or that we look at our partners and like let them know that what we see, that we see kind of the things that are going around, and this is really hard to communicate. So this can be really hard to communicate because it's really hard to communicate boundaries in the relationship, and it's really hard to know what kind of boundaries. Need to be communicated. So the kind of boundaries in relationships that should be communicated are physical and sexual boundaries. So this is knowing your own and your partner's physical and sexual boundaries, and it allows both partners to show and receive affection in a way that feels
caller.
Safe. So we have a caller online?
Yep.
Okay. Hello. Hello, I believe we have a caller.
Yeah, I patched them through. They should be on. They must have hung up.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry. Oh, boundaries that should be communicated is also time apart from your partner. So other boundaries that should be communicated is boundaries around negative emotions. And I'm going to actually say this. Negative emotions themselves are not necessarily unhealthy. Having anger, like, dictate how you treat your partner can be unhealthy, but getting angry and emotions in general is not something you can necessarily control. So if you choose to communicate your worries and annoyance with your partner in a healthy, respectful way, having those emotions is not healthy, but having negative emotions kind of dictates how you communicate, how your partner needs to be around you or how you act around your partner can be very, very harmful and turn into abuse very quickly. Things that should be communicated in dating relationships should be trust. So even though in the beginning of the relationship it's hard to tell what can make you distrust your partner, it's important to communicate our own issues and hang-ups when it comes to trusting or just distrusting our partner, but also just allow space and time for our partner to do the same. So communicated things that can be communicated in a dating relationship is really just expressing your priorities and your plans for the future in a way that it really depends, and especially in teen dating violence, that may or may not involve being close or around in the future. And then also that things that should be communicated is that...
caller.
Oh, we have a caller online. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, good morning. I have a question about elders that have dementia, and I'm one of those that have a partner with a dementia, and I've been... It's nerve-wracking to put up with that kind of person that have memory loss and dementia, and I'm a nervous wreck walking on eggshells. I don't know what else to do other than just try to keep talking to him.
I'm very sorry you're in that position. I don't really necessarily have answers for you over the radio, but if you would like to call PWC for any supportive services, please feel free to do so. And
The baby fell down.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling in and listening to the Peace Radio Show. So, for you and really anyone else listening to this radio show, the PWC contact information, our 24-hour crisis line, is 907-543-3456. Our toll-free line is 1-800-478-7799. And our Bethel local business line is 907-543-3444. If you would like to know what type of support and services we offer or any resources that we have for you, please feel free to call. So, one thing that should be communicated about in a dating relationship is, like, really sometimes that relationships don't work out. And it's completely within our right as individuals to end a relationship. And though having a relationship end or ending a relationship may be painful, it's important to know that ending the relationship peacefully with consideration and respect for your partner is the most healthy thing to do. And it's important to really accept and respect their decisions. And really just the failure to do so can turn into a really dangerous situation. Excuse me. So I'm going to go back into the physical and sexual boundaries and really just speaking about sexual boundaries in the relationship. So we often hear that, like, consent is needed when you're really thinking about sexual boundaries, but it's sometimes really hard to know exactly what consent is. So we're just going to start with consent in Alaska. So in Alaska, the age of consent is 16. Consent cannot be gained by authority. It cannot be gained by control, like using authority to get consent. Consent can't be given under the influence of drugs, so that could be street drugs, prescription drugs, alcohol, things like that. So under the influence, it cannot be given by someone with a severe mental disability or with a medical condition that makes it hard to say no. So it's really, really important that people understand and can comprehend the consequences of sexual activities when they're giving consent. Consent should be verbal for the safety of both partners, and the person giving consent has to have the ability to comprehend or prevent the consequences of sex. I seem to be jumping around topics here, but when we talk about consent, it's really easy to kind of forget all that also comes with it, too. So there's what we see as consent in Alaska, but then what we see really as consent when it comes to respect and healthy relationships. And I like to use the acronym for consent. So C is clear. Consent has to be clear, so making a clear yes, meaning that the body language and verbals have to really match up. O for never owed. So consent is never owed or should be given out of a feeling of obligation. This includes in, like, dating or marital relationships, that consent is never owed or should be given over a feeling of obligation. Consent is never demanded. So consent has to be asked for and should not be forced in any way. So consent is sober. Alcohol and drugs affect your inhibitions, and you can't know for sure that that's what kind of the person giving consent wants. So to be safe and really, ooh. Consent is enthusiastic. Consent is voluntary and safe and enjoyable. So if your partner looks uncomfortable or hesitant, it might be a sign that, you know, it goes against the first one, being clear that their verbals and then their body language match up. So in consent, now does not mean later. Consent isn't given kind of like a blanket. It's not given over everything for a long period of time. Each time consent is given is individual and should be treated as such. And consent can be taken away at any time. It doesn't matter if, you know, it's in the middle of it, before, like, consent can be taken away at any time, and that is someone's right. And consent should be taken seriously at all times. So sometimes people come up to me and says, well, they said this, is this consent? And I'll have to say, well, no, that's not something that's consensual. So things like begging, asking repeatedly until a yes is made, trying to justify the need to consent. So this is things like, if you love me, you would, this would be okay. If you cared for me, this wouldn't be an issue, things like that. So if, like, if consent isn't given the first time, then consent isn't there. Because when it's not taken seriously, it can sometimes leave the person without the opportunity to say no. And that can be real harmful. So now I'm just going to, so now that we kind of ended with consent, I just want to kind of give a little information about TWC and the information, I mean, and the programs we offer. So I'm just letting you know, I'm closing kind of down that conversation. I'm going to talk about the resources TWC has. So if you would like information on teen dating violence, or really knowing about consent, or really getting a presentation or anything like that, please feel call TWC. We have our Teens Acting Against Violence program and our teen advocate here. So Teens Acting Against Violence started in 1995. And it started off as just an anti-bullying group, looking into kind of the schools and their lives and seeing that there was a lot of bullying and just a lot of violence. And it kind of switched its focus to teen dating violence when they realized that that's a lot of what they were seeing was teen dating violence. And it started off kind of as a leadership group made for doing things like skits, audio PSAs, and turned into more learning about support and supporting each other and really just the issues that the teens in the community are facing. So Teens Acting Against Violence, TAV, talks about a lot of things like how to talk about and preventing things like suicide, domestic violence, really staying healthy, and inequalities that they see kind of around them. And TAV meets usually 3 times a week. It has changed a little bit because of the pandemic. TAV is heavily rooted in culture and peer education. And this means that, TAV often does their health relationships presentation and does cultural activities to build resilience. TAV is all about building resilience in the teens of Bethel. And so if you'd like more information about that, please feel free to call there. We have our shelter. We have counseling or just other agencies referrals here at TWC. If you would like to call TWC for legal assistance, so this could be getting protective orders, getting assistance with filling out applications for a lawyer, getting family law applications, and court accompaniment, please feel free to call TWC for our legal advocate. We have our housing program. which we have our homeless prevention program for the community, which I'm not sure how it's funded right now, but if you have an eviction notice or electricity bill, you could ask for assistance. It's a first-come, first-served basis. We have our Children's Advocacy Center. We have our coordinated community response team, our children's program and children's advocate. We have our thrift store, and then outreach and prevention. So if you would like information on any of our programs or any of the services we offer, call TWC. So just for our ending announcements, the thrift store is, again, now accepting donations. So if you have donations, please call TWC to receive instructions on how and where to bring them. Again, please refrain from leaving them outside the thrift store, as those items will be can be ruined by the weather. So this weekend, the thrift store will be open from 11 to 3 on Sunday, so feel free to head on over and take advantage of our wonderful prices. One grocery bag full of clothes will only cost $1. There are job openings at TWC, so if you're interested in becoming part of the TWC family, you can find the application at www.tundrapeace.org. And if you would like to utilize our services, you can call our 24-hour crisis line for support at 907-543-3456. Our toll-free number at 1-800-478-7799. And our Bethel local business line at 907-543-3444. Thank you for tuning in to our TWC Peace Talk Radio show. I'm Annie Mae Lee, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m. right here on KYUK.